Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Learning businesses need to consistently perform on three fronts: reaching the right people, generating revenue to sustain their work, and demonstrating real impact. Now, none of those challenges are new. Reach, revenue, and impact have, in fact, been central to how we think about learning businesses for a long time.
They have indeed. They're even part of the Tagore's tagline. But while reach, revenue, and impact are familiar concepts, they're not always treated as connected. And that disconnect is where a lot of frustration shows up.
And I think marketing feels harder than it used to. I think revenue goals feel more urgent, and I think impact is still challenging to measure in meaningful ways and for learning businesses to articulate clearly.
And so in this episode, we want to basically start a process of taking a renewed look at reach, revenue, and impact, and why learning businesses so often struggle with them, how those struggles tend to reinforce one another. So we're gonna break them down in detail, not just in this episode, but in future episodes as well. But today, we'll kind of tee up the concepts and start digging deeply into to reach and its relationship to the others.
So let's reinforce why we think revisiting these themes of reach, revenue, and impact makes sense now. And the main reason, I think, is just that we see them as foundational. We see them as these pillars on which successful learning businesses are built.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the Tagore's tagline for a reason. In fact, they were not the original Tagore's tagline. We came to use them as a tagline because we saw them being an issue just so often. They are perennial challenges when we step back and try to name what it is we see learning businesses wrestle with again and again, year over year. It's reach, revenue, and impact.
Right. So these are not trends. You know, we think these are perennial, as you said, perennial challenges. And so that's why we want to revisit them. They're also especially top of mind because of some recent data.
That's right. This is clearly stuff that people are, you know, continuing to think about. We saw in our 2026 Strategic Outlook survey data that revenue is top strategic goal. More than half of respondents indicated that increasing revenue was either their number one strategic goal or their number two strategic goal.
In that same survey data, we also saw support for the idea that capacity is often constrained, that often learning businesses feel like they don't have enough resources to do what they need or want to do, and that capacity constraints exist especially around marketing and not having enough marketing resources, which then that ties very directly to the reach pillar.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, we saw some in the survey data, but this is just, you know, we continually see this in working with clients and just in our conversations with organizations, a weakness really in measuring, and just as importantly, articulating, communicating the impact that's actually being made by the learning experiences that organizations are offering.
And so part of why we want to bring reach, revenue, and impact up again is because we're hearing about each of them, but we want to bring them up together because not only are these perennial challenges, they are perennial interrelated challenges. We don't think that you can really meaningfully address any one of these without also addressing the other two.
That said, we do think it's well worthwhile to go deep on each one of them and make sure you fully understand each of these pillars as we then start to really draw the connections between them and how they how they function as a system, really, and how learning businesses should approach their markets.
That's right. So we're going to dig in deeply on reach in the remainder of this episode. But again, keep in mind that everything we're saying about reach has to be put into the frame with revenue and impact as well. We will revisit revenue and impact in a future episode.
And we'll probably keep repeating that throughout this episode anyway, so we'll sound like a broken record. You will not forget that these concepts are interrelated, we promise.
And so maybe we should just briefly recap kind of what we mean by these words, reach, revenue, and impact. We throw them around a lot. I think there is a lot that is immediately sort of understandable by them, but I think it also benefits from explaining a little bit more. For us, reach is about being able to connect with the right learners. And by right, we mean not necessarily all possible learners. We really mean having a certain clarity around who it is that can benefit from what you have to offer. Who is it that you are trying to reach? And then how can you actually manage to connect with them?
And then revenue is one result of that. If you're able to connect with the right learners, with the right offerings, charge them appropriately, you are going to generate revenue. For most organizations, you're going to want that to be net positive revenue, even if you're a nonprofit, because you want your business to be sustainable. You want to be able to invest back into the business, and or if you're part of a larger organization, like an association, for example, to invest back into other parts of the business.
And then reaching those right learners also speaks to your ability to have the impact that you desire. Right. Because if you're not reaching the right learners, you may even have a stellar course or conference or whatever experience it is that you're marketing to that learner. But if they're not really the right learner, then they may not see that impact. They may not be able to actually improve in the way that you're hoping for. So again, tightly interrelated, reach, revenue, and impact.
So now let's dive in more deeply to reach is, you know, the first one we always name in that pillar, and talk about some of the challenges that we see around reach right now.
Right. And for us, I think the key issue right now is attention.
And this isn't just true for learning businesses. This is true in the world in general. I think right now that attention really is one of our scarcest resources. We have so many demands on our attention, people who, you know, want to push information at us, people who want to extract data from us and be able to use that data in various ways. It can be difficult to navigate. And really, it's become true that the competition for learning businesses is very often other learning providers are competitors. We think about that, but often they're not the main competition. It's everything else that's competing for your learner's attention, which is going to influence whether they're even going to decide that they want to learn anything with you. They have too many other demands on their time and attention, and you just may never be able to get them to engage with your learning experiences.
And I think that this competition for attention has ratcheted up increasingly over recent years. And so I think it gets to why reach can feel harder today, because I think some of the things that maybe work successfully for learning businesses, you know, even 5 years ago, certainly a decade ago, aren't as effective anymore. You take something like email marketing that, mm-hmm. you know, used to be pretty effective, pretty reliable. And now we have, you know, I know my inbox has just become more and more stuffed, you know, on any given day. And so what used to work is maybe not working as well because of all those competing demands for attention that we all face.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, 5-10 years ago, you know, doing webinars for lead generation was standard stuff, putting up a lead magnet, you know, for somebody to sign up for and download, standard stuff. And obviously people still do that, but none of that works anywhere near as well as it used to, because everybody and their mother has a lead magnet these days. That said, you know, attention is still like your top of the funnel territory. You have to get attention if you want anything to happen, so you can't ignore it.
Right. And the top of the funnel, because, you know, attention is then what can lead to interest. And then this is getting into the ADA model that we've talked about before. So you have attention, A, you have interest, I, the D is desire. So, you know, do they actually want what you're offering? And then A, hopefully you get to that action. You know, are they going to actually register for that course? Are they going to download the research report that you have? Whatever it is. But if you don't have that first A, that first attention, you can't hope to move them through and get them to the point of action.
Yeah, you need that first A before you'll get that fourth A. And we'll talk about conversion some here in a little bit as well. But I mean, as far as attention goes, you know, I think the major prerequisite for attention at this point is trust. And, you know, we hear this a lot. You got to build trust. You got to be trusted. You got to be the authority in your niche. But it's true. I mean, trust is the currency that allows attention to happen at all. So you have to step back as any sort of business, and certainly a learning business, and think about how are we building the trust that's going to earn us the attention of the learners who we want to serve?
Right. And I think that, you could get lucky with a super clever subject line or something like that, that you get someone's attention for a split second.
So much cynicism around that stuff now.
But if you don't have something that's trustworthy, once they do tune in and decide to pay attention, then boy, you've just squandered a lot there. And so what you need to make sure then is that you do have trust when you're communicating. And to have that trust, you got to think about, like you're saying, Jeff, what are we worth? What do people want to listen to us on? Why should they listen to us on particular topics? Where do we have deep expertise or authority? And make sure that you're communicating around that, and that knowledge and that expertise and that credibility underlies how you're communicating.
Yeah, and it's a long-term project. I mean, it takes commitment, it takes intentionality, it takes persistence and investment. You've got to be willing to put in the time to build trust. It may take 472 podcast episodes to build trust with somebody for all we know.
Well, and so this idea of trust, the importance of trust, we coined a term in the report that we put out that goes along with some of that survey data we were quoting at the beginning, and we called this credibility capital. So these really are the assets that you have that establish your trust.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice little turn of phrase, rolls right off the tongue there, credibility capital. It's not rolling off of my tongue, apparently, but it should in theory. But, I mean, every organization has this in one way or another. I mean, it is kind of your value proposition, your unique selling proposition. You know, for learning businesses, you may have standards, you may have credentials. If you're, say, a membership organization of some sort, possibly your ability to convene the right people at the right time and make things happen, your advocacy capabilities, these are all part of your credibility capital. And again, there's a degree of consciousness and intentionality, really recognizing, identifying the things that are your credibility capital and really aligning your learning offerings tightly with those, because that's where you're going to stand out in the marketplace. That's where you're going to have trust. That's where you're going to have authority and have the best chance of standing out and connecting with your prospective learners.
Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
And I think as part of trust, because we keep talking about trust here, part of that is having respect for the audiences that you are interacting with or hoping to interact with. And I think that personalization is actually a big part of how you show respect. I mean, don't send the email about a particular course to everyone in your database. You need to be aware of which people in that database could benefit from, are at the appropriate level to take that course. You really need to be thinking about that. And so doing the due diligence on your part to make sure that you understand who you're communicating with, so that when they do open that email, if they do trust your name enough in their inbox to see it and open it, that when they do, it's going to resonate with them. Because again, if you manage to get them to open it, and we've got such limited attention, and it doesn't speak to them and it doesn't say something of value, again, just a big opportunity squandered there.
Yeah, and I think that's a nice perspective on personalization, because we tend to think of personalization, you know, from the standpoint of getting the right stuff in front of somebody, which it is. I mean, you know, you want to do that. That's part of what you're using the data for. But you are also using that data as an engine of respect, basically, as you're indicating, and, you know, making somebody feel like in their interactions with you, you have their best interest in mind, and you're showing up with the things that are really meaningful to them.
And I think, too, that part of credibility capital, part of establishing trust, part of being respectful in doing all of those things, which are so important, don't think purely about your formal education offerings and your course catalog alone.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is an interesting aspect of Reach that I think that we maybe haven't talked about enough. I know we've talked about it at some in various places. In my mind, it comes down to the distinction we've made before between learning and education, that there is a difference between them. Education tends to be the formalized, structured experience. It tends to be represented by the types of products that go into a catalog, and requires people who are going to design and develop and produce and market and sell. And when we talk about being in the learning business, a lot of times that's where people's minds go immediately, is just to the catalog and to the learning products that you're going to sell. But of course, that's a small slice of how learning actually happens. We know this, that most learning is informal. It's in the, you know, the relationships we build, the conversations we have, the volunteer opportunities we take, and just
the podcasts we listen to.
The podcasts that we listen to. There are just so many ways that we're learning, you know, in any given moment, in any given day. And those are opportunities to reach our audiences and to serve our audiences. They may or may not be monetizable, or at least, you know, immediately and directly monetizable, but they are the path to building that trust. They are the path to representing the value that we want to represent to the audiences that we serve. And I think a lot of learning businesses, in my mind, this applies particularly to, say, you know, membership organizations that are trying to serve, you know, a sort of identified base of members, need to step back and think about what are those informal opportunities that are represented by learning, and are we paying enough attention to that, or is everything we're doing focused on the catalog concept? Because I think if you're only focused on the catalog, then you're probably being too transactional. You're not really thinking about the sort of longer term, more nuanced relationship that you need to build with your audience to have the trust, to get the attention, to be able to fulfill the reach that you need to as a learning business.
And I think silos can come into play here, that if you happen to be in an association learning business where events happen under kind of one umbrella and courses happen under another, and then maybe publications under yet another, it can really be very segmented.
You stop seeing the connections between them, yeah.
Right. And so I think you'll have organizations where you'll have that chief content officer. And if you broadly think about all that content that you have, all that credibility capital that you have, which is almost always fundamentally about, there's a possibility for learning built into all of those, because, you know, they are about knowledge and expertise that's built into them. So I think everything you're saying, and being aware of there may be some organizational hurdles that have to be addressed in order to really think the right way about reach in your organization.
Yeah, I mean, we see increasingly that it does help to have somebody who has that kind of high level responsibility and accountability for really looking across the knowledge assets, the whole portfolio of experiences that an organization can provide. Yeah, I'll give a shout out to Todd Slater at NIGP, the chief content officer there. Like, he thinks about things that way. They've got their formal education portfolio, but the events, the publications, really all of their interactions with their membership base and their prospective audience, he's attuned to all of that and sort of where learning is happening all along the way. So I think it's important to have kind of that sort of perspective, that person. It's also a governance issue, too, though. We see this continually more and more as we're going into organizations. We're having to pull together representatives from all these disparate committees or parts of the organization. that aren't connecting the dots in the way they need to be for the organization to be delivering the learning value that it needs to, that is only partially represented by a catalog per se, but that requires everybody thinking more systemically, more about an ecosystem and less about just a catalog.
And because we're talking about reach, and because we've gotten into this idea of some silos and some divisions and mental blocks that might need to come down, I think, too, that there is a marketing aspect to this. And for us, there's always been a really interesting connection between learning and content marketing.
Yeah.
Because content marketing is fundamentally about providing something that essentially helps whoever's receiving that content marketing, you know, so they're beginning to learn something, they're beginning to see some value there. And so again, thinking about even the content marketing as a learning opportunity, and I'm not sure enough organizations do that.
No, and they're not drawing that, they aren't really sort of connecting the dots from what they might do in terms of providing marketing content into, say, that catalog finally. I mean, eventually you do want to get people to that catalog or to that event, because that's where you're going to be able to monetize. But you have to be thinking broadly about that. And, you know, by the way, there's AI out there now. And the way that we're seeing now individual learners engage with knowledge content and learning experiences, you know, they're going to be doing it more through a chat interface than through a course in many instances. We're already seeing a lot of organizations think about that in terms of, you know, setting up the chat type interfaces, the AI interfaces into their knowledge and learning base, making some of that public. So it, you know, it essentially is a marketing mechanism while you're empowering and enabling people to learn from your credibility capital, to go back to that term. But then eventually maybe reaching a point where there is a paywall, that you do have to pay something to get to the rest of it, whether that's becoming a member or becoming a subscriber or whatever the case might be.
Well, and that's a very natural segue into the next point, which is, you know, we started off by saying that attention really is kind of the fundamental issue with reach in many learning businesses. You got to get that attention if you're going to hope to have success with your reach. But you can't stop with the attention alone. You do ultimately have to get to a conversion of some sort, to the action, if we go back to the ADA model.
Yeah, getting from that first A to that fourth A, and, you know, providing that value along the way, whether that's in the, you know, the AI interface, or whether it's a, you know, the mini course or whatever it is, however you're engaging learners, where you are developing that interest in what you have to offer, you're developing that desire and ultimately getting to them to that point of conversion.
And that's usually then where revenue comes in,
yeah.
You know, back to the monetization part of this. And it also, to my mind, is, well, it sets you up for the potential for impact, right? Because now you have a learner who's kind of signed on to engage in a particular learning opportunity, which is then hopefully going to lead to that impact that you want to have.
And the impact is going to factor into the conversion. I mean, we're now at this point where you see you can't really separate these things, because they just play into each other. But you're generally not going to convert somebody if they don't understand, can't see what the impact of paying you some money to go further is going to be. And that can take a lot of forms. I mean, social proof is very valuable, just testimonials, case studies, examples of what others have gotten from engaging in your learning experiences. But those typically, you know, have to be there. And we've talked about this concept of signaling before, and how with your education, you need to be signaling something out to the marketplace, which is typically that if somebody participates in this learning experience, it's going to lead to X. And you want the learner to see that. You typically want the learner's employer to see that. But that signaling is all about communicating the impact that you're claiming, and have evidence to substantiate that a learner is going to get if they do actually commit to whatever learning experience you're putting in front of them.
Right. And so, you know, that's all part of making that argument for investment of further attention and time, right? You know, that you've had to get enough attention and time to even get to this point of trying to get them to conversion. That impact signaling is going to be a big part of someone saying, okay, yeah, I'm willing to spend more time, more money to engage in this specific offering because I see the value for me. And again, this gets back to that personalization piece, or, you know, you've got to know who you're talking to enough that that message lands and lands appropriately.
Well, we're at the point where we've been talking about reach for close to 25 minutes.
And we could go longer.
We're not proud or tired. For those who, if you know, you know, Alice's restaurant reference there. We could go on and on, but we're already seeing that reach is so tightly connected to the other two concepts, revenue and impact. And so we're going to come back and talk about those more deeply as well in the future, but thought it was worth, you know, dedicating some substantial time to that first R today.
Reach, revenue, and impact aren't separate challenges for learning businesses. They're deeply connected. And yet, we focused today on reach. But we'll be focusing on revenue and impact in the future, so stay tuned.
You can find show notes, a transcript, and related resources at leadinglearning.com/episode472.
And if you find the Leading Learning podcast valuable, please consider sharing this episode with a colleague or coworker who's wrestling with reach.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.